Good morning and welcome to Mr. Eldon Podcast. It's Monday, October 11th, the morning after Washington's 33-22 loss at home to New Orleans. Here to talk about that, it's the Jameis Winston to my Landon Collins, Matt Turrell. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Jamie. How are you?
Welcome to the suck. That's the thing that that's the thing that I've heard for a long time. I think out of the mouth of my old buddy Craig Thomas, who's a Browns fan. It's a military reference. Anyways, I think that's our experience now is welcome to the suck.
Well, you like to say every year, like, if we could just be relevant around Thanksgiving, you're happy. That's like your big hope for a season. And it is the day formerly known as Columbus Day. And I don't know that we're relevant anymore. So that's not great.
Well, yeah, that's what had me so excited about last week. It's like they didn't look good in beating Atlanta, but they maintained relevance by sticking around at 2-2. And now 2-3, losing in embarrassing fashion to New Orleans with Kansas City ahead. Also 2-3, by the way. We're on the precipice, I think, of perhaps, you know, your friendly podcasters tuning out for a little bit.
Yeah, I was pretty close to it here. I have a totally sort of separate line of questioning than our usual way of approaching these games. Are you game for me to ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
All right,
go ahead.
Cool. We are at that point of the season. So yesterday afternoon, evening, Dan Snyder was trending on Twitter, and I sort of asked why. Like, I clicked on it to see if, you know, something really exciting had occurred. He had sold the team or like launched himself into space or whatever. And it wasn't. It was just a bunch of people doing the usual, like, you know, Dan Snyder, we should hold you accountable. You should be ashamed of yourself kind of stuff. And I was like, why? Like, this is the problems for the last few weeks are, as to me, as non-Dan Snyder related as I can think of. I mean, this is horrible on-field performance, seemingly pretty bad coaching. Snyder has not, to the best of my knowledge, you know, done anything overtly terrible. No, like, you know, I don't know, whatever, like racketeering or whatever it is that he does. And so it just seemed weird to me. So where do you fall on this? Do you blame Snyder for this?
The funny thing about how bad they are is pretty good compared to the last few seasons. They haven't been good through five games since 2018. I looked it up. This is as good as it gets.
Good by what?
1-4. Wins and losses. Yes, they were 1-4 last year, on their way to being worse than 1-4 before finally righting the ship and getting to 7-9. 2 years ago, they were 0-5, on their way to 3-13. This is feeling a little 3-13, by the way. And then in 2018, all the way back in 2018, they were 3-2 on their way to 7-9. So I'm just beaten down, man. I don't really have a whole lot of juice left in me. I mean, the defense is, I mean, like, the offense, they could just kind of give a pass. We're playing a guy they picked up off the street less than a year ago at quarterback. Like, the fact that they're averaging over 20 points a game is a gift, and we should just accept it. The defense is, I mean, it's a joke. Like, this is so bad. This is the only team where you could attempt an obvious Hail Mary and the receiver will be open. It wasn't just that the receiver didn't jump, or that none of the defenders even jumped, or that they were somehow caught off guard by a Hail Mary that was obvious to the viewer at home. It's that, like, the receiver wasn't even covered somehow. That's how bad this defense, and especially the secondary, is.
The secondary looks atrocious. The linebackers look atrocious. The coaching seems really bad. Like, everything that you just mentioned about the Hail Mary, everything where the first touchdown where, you know, Landon Collins was doing God knows what, and they allegedly got surprised by a quick snap, which, like, it was early in the game. Just be aware. I don't know.
I loved and hated that play. This touchdown that the Saints got early on. First of all, just like the fact that it was on a 3rd and 7 was like chef's kiss. You know, because they have the worst third down, you know, defense in the league, like, infamously. But, like, the whole play seemed like they weren't expecting New Orleans to pass. Like you mentioned, Landon Collins was caught off guard or something, like up near the line or whatever. And the wide receiver just got, like, wide open downfield over the top of Collins. It was almost like they were like stacking the line or something. Like, what are you even doing? And I do love the fact that like NFL quarterbacks and offenses are so good and so sophisticated that a dude who has been on the bench for 2 years and Jameis can come up to the line in that situation and just be like, yep, Landon Collins is like 5 yards too shallow on this play. I'm just going to go over the top for a 70-yard touchdown. That's how good NFL players are.
So let's say they need to make a drastic move to keep us interested, okay? Let's say something drastic needs to happen. What is your preference? Do you want the – here's the top choices I would think would be, from least severe to probably most severe is bench Landon Collins, cut Landon Collins, fire Jack Del Rio, or somehow literally implode the stadium. Like, what needs to happen here for you to maintain your interest?
I like this like line of thought where you're like shaming Landon Collins, like make Landon Collins sing Wonderwall at midfield before the next game, you know, whatever.
Well, no, that would be delightful. That would maintain my interest for sure.
I mean, it also very kind of you to not include like other players that are not Landon Collins. I feel like you could go down the list. Is like bizarro Trayvon Diggs. You know, Trayvon Diggs has an interception in every single game this year. 6 interceptions on the season. William Jackson III has a penalty in every game this year. That's hard to do as a corner. I think he leads the league in penalties.
Well, if you can set your mind to it, you can really do anything. That's what I've always said.
Yeah. He's the Trayvon Diggs of sucking ass. That's what we have as our free agent prize.
Well, one of our several free agent prizes, we also have whatever you want to say about Curtis Samuel and Ryan Fitzpatrick. So this class is doing
well. And Landon Collins himself was a free agent prize 2 years ago, I guess. Or was it 3 years? Who even cares? Back to your question.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be fire Jack Del Rio, right? Like, it's not just that the two plays we mentioned are so good. Like, I could not – I had, like, a birthday party thing for my son, which was Panthers themed, by the way, which I think is a good adjacent note to our podcast. It wasn't Washington football themed football party. It was a Panthers football party. I tuned out after halftime, kind of by choice, kind of by, you know, necessity with the party going on. But those two plays, not just how bad they were, but then like the little bit of explanation that I've seen after the game about them being caught off guard by the Hail Mary, about them being like not for the snap on the 70-yard, like just the finger pointing and the, yeah. And it started last week too. I mean, there was just a lot of like coming out of the media availabilities, quotes from Del Rio, quotes from William Jackson, saying, just tell me what to do. I'll do whatever they tell me to do. It's not good. I feel like this is a definite in-season defensive coordinator firing situation. Fortunately, I don't think you do it the week before Kansas City.
Well, why not? I mean, whatever. Kansas City's going to put up 45 no matter who's back there. You might as well just, you know, get the new guy in and start installing his stuff. I am not sure that I'm at the defensive coordinator firing yet. I think what I do if I'm the head coach is I ritually, as you say, humiliate Landon Collins this week or pick somebody. Maybe there's somebody else you can humiliate. But I think Landon Collins is the natural choice. I think his performance disproportionate to his salary makes him just sort of the obvious selection. Plus, they didn't bring him in, so they can still, maintain some cover on that. Because I feel like we are, if we're not already there, we are on the cusp of the bloom fully being off the rose on the entire Ron Rivera era. I think the pass offered by him being somebody else and his, you know, story last year and everything else, I think we are officially past that. And it's now like, please stop being awful.
Yeah. I mean, if the defense was serviceable, I wouldn't be close to that. I mean, it's a big if.
Well, but, it is a big if because he's a defensive coach and he's I know he's not the defensive coordinator, but part of the identity they're supposedly trying to build here is around the defense. So the fact that the defense is rotten, seemingly to the core, is a real fundamental problem.
Yeah.
Yep. Sucks. Okay. Good chat.
Yeah. I don't really have a rebuttal to that. I A couple of thoughts. One is this Chiefs game could actually be really fun because the Chiefs defense is also awful. And they're, you know, they're similarly in need of a win. I think this could be like one of those games where both teams are flirting with a 40 burger. And I certainly would not bet on Washington to win, but I would bet on them combining for like, you know, well over 60 points. So that could be fun.
I'm not going to ask you to guess the line. I've already seen it, and I'm not curious about that. What I want to know is this. How many points would you need Washington to be getting for you to put genuine money down on Washington?
All right. Oh, my gosh. 14? I mean, I think the line's probably like 10 or 7 or – wait, where is the game?
The that's a great question. It's here. It's, I believe it's the yeah. I believe it's the not homecoming. They don't call it homecoming anymore, but it's the like alumni game or whatever.
Well, you shouldn't schedule the Chiefs for the alumni game. I think it's going to be, I think the line's probably between 7 and 10, but I would need 14.
So what I saw as of this morning was that it went out, it came out at 7 and then actually moved to 6.5, I guess, after they saw just how bad the Chiefs defense was last night. But yeah, I would need, I think 14 is probably about right. Maybe even 14 and a half.
That line will move. Who on earth is betting Washington plus 7 in that game?
I honestly don't think they could make the line high enough for me to actually take Washington. Like I'm saying 14 and a half, but I think at that point you're just like, no way I'm actually putting money on that. Like that would be insane. So right. I think you're right. And I think it's going to threaten to be high scoring, but I think the way it goes is like, you know, 14-14 and then 21-14 and then Heinicke throws an interception that goes back for a touchdown. So then you're 28-14. And then even if they just trade, you're still at a 14-point deficit. And I don't think they just trade because I think that once Heinicke starts pressing, it feels like his mistakes tend to spiral. He seems like someone who, when he is, you know, in it, and feeling it, he can do it. But as soon as it starts going off the rails, it sure seems like it just goes off the rails. So that's what I think. I don't see how they can actually maintain a shootout for long enough. I don't think they can do it. So
okay,
yeah, that should be fun. It's gonna be a good podcast next week.
Do you want to talk at all about anything else? You start talking all about Heinicke. Well, one thing I'll say about Heinicke. The pendulum very quickly swung from the conversation being, you know, could he actually be the answer at QB to, well, of course not. He's a serviceable backup. Like that shit swung very quickly.
Very quickly. But I think it's because he appears to be a serviceable backup. And I also think the conversation's insane. What does long-term answer mean? Like if he plays well this season, but they still finish with the top three pick and there's, you know, whatever, wind up being three great quarterbacks sitting there, are you seriously going to be like, he was so good that we're not going to take one of those? Like,
of course not. Of course I wouldn't. No.
Right. Or if Aaron Rodgers, for whatever reason, is actively like, I want to go to DC and finish my career there for whatever reason, are you seriously going to be like, well, we got Taylor Heinicke, so I think we're okay, there's been no point this season where that has been my reaction. So no. Long-term was always a sort of thing. I mean, to me, long-term at this point is, do you want him to keep trying or do you want to put Kyle Allen in and just see what that guy can do, if anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think you need a prolonged period, like a, you know, multi-game stretch of clearly not being a good quarterback before you go to Allen or bring Fitz back. But yeah, obviously, just like at the Washington opposing quarterbacks this year, like Herbert and Allen, those are long-term answers. Those are like franchise elite, you know, that's what you're really hoping for quarterbacks. Everybody else, it's like Winston, Jones, Matt Ryan at this point. Yeah, you know, Heinicke's ceiling is like in that batch, you know? Like,
I mean, I think that's really optimistic. Jones, no, maybe. No, Jones might be accurate, maybe.
Well, Jameis was a backup for the last 2 years. The last time he was a starter in the league, he threw 33 picks, you know, like.
I'll buy that. Let me phrase it the other way. Putting Matt Ryan in that list is, I think, a little bit of a, even late career Matt Ryan, I think it's a little bit of a disservice to him.
Yeah. Okay. But I'm with you. But I feel like last week the conversation was maybe like some minority, 10, 20% of Washington fans were like convincing themselves that Heinicke was a long-term solution. And then there was like a little meatier portion that maybe like 20 or 30% who were like, I don't know, he's just got something.
Yeah.
You know? Which and is then where there's I think like, I was and, falling. And then there's like half of us that are like, you know, he's a high-end backup and he's a really fun starter, you know, as needed. Now I feel like that last portion is basically like 90%, you know, like after yesterday's game alone.
I think those second two portions had more overlap than people thought. Like I was saying, I don't know, maybe he's got something about the guy who was, you know, in the XFL as a backup and, you know, taking classes at ODU and then came out of nowhere. Is saying maybe he's got something to me always meant maybe he could stick in the NFL for 5 to 6 years, 8 years as a, you know, a journeyman capable backup spot starter kind of guy. We needed a lot more positive feedback to I'm sorry, I lost you there. To we needed a lot more positive feedback to start thinking bigger than that, I think. Right? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I just think it's funny. Like each game is a referendum on the quarterback. And it just yesterday's performance was so poor. You know, I mean, I had a couple picks, had a couple like missed receivers. They obviously lost in disappointing fashion. That, you know, the hype, the bloom came off the rose big time.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of funny. Like, I feel like people point to the Buffalo game as, oh man, you know, Buffalo's a good defense. And when Heinicke plays against a good defense, he's not enough. You know, they only put up, you know, 20 points or whatever. Well, you know, Mahomes and the Chiefs only put up 20 points on Buffalo last night, you know? So like, I don't know, each game, I'd like to give it a little more time to breathe, but I do think it's that like, yeah, you're happy if Heinicke's in your QB room as the backup. You're not happy if he's, you know, what you're banking on going forward. I just hope the good times get back to rolling. I think they will against Kansas City. I think the Heinicke experience is going to be fun on Sunday.
All right, I'll buy it. I the other thing that the Chiefs Bills game was a referendum on is, you know, of the three losses, the Saints is the only one that really feels bad. Now, understood that the two wins were fluky and weird and whatever. Like, I get that. But, I mean, the Chargers and Bills look like top two teams in the NFL possibly at this point. There's certainly two of the top three. So losing to them is hardly, you know, cause for panic. It's all the rest of the games that are cause for panic.
100%. This was the first game where it was like, God damn it. Like, you really wanted to win that. It was the first loss they had where, you know, you felt like that's one that you should win or that you should at least like be right there in the end. You're totally right. San Diego and Buffalo, especially in hindsight, Washington's not winning those games.
No, I mean, when Washington got shredded by Justin Herbert, like, we were like, man, we made him look like the greatest quarterback on the planet. And it's like, oh, well, actually, you know, maybe he's just that good. And sort of ditto for Josh Allen.
There was a fun moment that I just happened to catch on the Sunday Night Football broadcast where Drew Brees was talking about Herbert. And he said something like, you know, I was at Chargers practice. And I think he was talking about in the preseason. And he's like, after the practice, the quarterbacks are all doing like little like QB challenges, you know, like who can throw the ball into a bucket, you know, 60 yards downfield or whatever. And he said this, the way that Herbert threw the ball was unlike anything he'd ever seen before, that the ball actually appeared to accelerate as it went downfield. You know, like if he threw like a, you know, 30 yard out or whatever, it was getting faster as it got to the receiver versus the other way around. And it was just like, you could see, I mean, somebody like him, you know, clearly knows something about quarterbacking and how to throw a football, saying that about Herbert, like he's never seen a guy throw a ball like that before, just tells you how special he is.
I feel like we don't talk enough about how San Diego has had just an unbelievable run at quarterback, for what seems like forever now. And, you know, like Green Bay, you hear about it a lot, but San Diego also, and it just makes our lives even more frustrating.
Herbert, Rivers, Breeze, Stan Humphries, right? You're talking about Stan Humphries?
Natural, the natural progression. Yeah, that's sure. Correct.
There was like a decade or two where they were in the wilderness between Dan Fouts and Drew Breeze.
Sure, this is true. Although they did, as you just pointed out, manage to go to the Super Bowl in one of those wilderness years.
Yes, the Stan Humphries year. I randomly looked up Stan Humphries' Pro Football Reference recently, and like the year that he led them to the Super Bowl in like '95 or whatever, like 3 years after he left DC. I think he was Rippon's backup, right? He was Rippon's backup during the Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways, he went to the Chargers that year in like a full season of being an NFL Super Bowl contending quarterback. He threw 17 touchdowns. The game has changed, Matt.
The game really has changed. The game done changed, some might say.
Yeah. It's natural. Rolling off your tongue.
That is how I speak all the time. It's just naturally and fluidly. We're miserable. I'm just trying to recap where we are in the conversation. We're miserable, but we're optimistic about Sunday.
No, we're not. We're optimistic about being an entertaining game.
I've had an interesting experience watching games a couple of these weeks here because my son has started taking a class on Sundays that starts at 1. But he's old enough that I can just drop him off at 12:55, and it's in Bethesda, so like there's stuff there. You know what I mean? So like I park the car and I just find one of the sports bars and I sit outside and watch the first chunk of the game in that fashion. But so I'm around people, which is weird just in general these days. But also it's been a long time since I've had just random Washington fans with me. And let me tell you, the sample size of folks that I've been near for games, they are not happy with anything at all. Even the good plays are not done correctly. And it seems like I feel like this crew is this fan base is just gone, just not existing.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that. I feel that way too. I mean, it's a little different experience, honestly, you know, being 6 hours away, somewhat in Panthers country, but like on the coast of Carolina, it's kind of like a land grab for other fan bases. You know, like it's a real mixed up chameleon of who's rooting for who down here. And I just don't know any other Washington football fans. Like, just in my circle of friends down here, I've got, you know, Steelers and Cowboys and Eagles, and there's two Dolphins fans for some reason, and just Bills and Patriots and everybody. I feel like the whole league is covered. I don't have any other Washington football fans. And this used to be Redskins country. Like before the Panthers came, and well after the Panthers got here, this was Redskins country. Like if you went to like a grocery store and there was an official team of the Harris Teeter or whatever, it would be like a Redskins logo. Racist. No, racism is very popular down here. Let me tell you, still is. But no, there's just like no other Washington football fans. And I mean, I think that's a good sign because like what you're talking about, that like atrophy locally might take a little longer to show up in like really, really obvious ways versus like here, you know, when you're a little bit removed, like everybody jumped off the bandwagon a long time ago and they just jumped on somebody else's wagon.
Well, I like the idea that in your, you know, extended friend group, it's like it's sort of the football fan equivalent of the line from Rounders. You know, if you can't spot the Washington football fan in the room, chances are you're the Washington football fan in the room.
Right.
I guess what was different for me is that for the last, you know, whatever season and a half, the last 20 months, at least for the whole pandemic, and actually extending back before that, mainly because of my kids' ages and what Sundays were like, I've only watched the games with certain friends and family who, you know, are around, right? So you get used to people's sort of rhythms. And I'm definitely the dreary negative one. And then I got a couple friends who are like cautiously skeptical. I got a few friends who are just kind of checked out and barely even consider themselves fans anymore. And then I got some friends who remain optimistic, and every time something goes well, they get very excited, and then their hearts are broken. So seeing that just like the random folks were all more negative than me was really eye-opening for me. I thought I was cranky, but turns out I'm just like everybody else.
I have one last thing that I think all this dovetails with is like last year, a lot of people made fun, and I still get made fun of when I wear the shirt. You know, a lot of people made fun of us being 7-9 division champs.
Mm-hmm.
and like how sad and kind of silly that is, you know, like you guys were losers and you're celebrating, you know, being division champs. I'm so glad that I celebrated that shit. Like that's as good as it had been for us in years. And it looks like that's as good as it's going to get for years to come. So yeah, fly your 7-9 division champs flag high. Because I'm just like glad that we kind of, I think you and I maybe appreciated that and had some fun with it, because yeah, man, that's what we have.
I think maybe it's time for Breaking Tea to move on from t-shirts to like inspirational throw pillows and stuff, you know, like celebrate the 7-9s of life, because you never know when the next 3-13 is coming. I think it'll be great.
I'm doing my research for the show. You know, I'm a good host doing my research. And just kind of hit me, you know, how bad it's been. You know, I mean, obviously it's been bad, but like last year was a real high point. 7-9 was a real high point. Dude, including this year, because we're not going to make the playoffs. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 full seasons where last year's losing team division championship was the highlight. Before that, the highlight was us going 9-7 in 2015 and losing the wild card.
Well,
what are we even doing?
That's dreary.
What are we doing? Jesus Christ. Well, I'm going to go back to 2013 real quick and just look at. Okay. So 2013 through this year, Washington has not won more than 9 games in a season. Mm-hmm. I wish Pro Football Reference was helping me out here. Showing me the cumulative record, because it would be so bad going all the way back to 2013. It's almost a decade. We talk about like, oh, it's been a long 3 decades. Haha. Going back almost a decade, we have 2 wild card appearances. One was a 9, or we have 2 wild card game appearances, both losses. One on a 9 win season, one on a 7 win season. And other than that, it was major losing seasons.
The big thing that I found eye-opening about going back 3 decades or 2 decades in this mm-hmm. case was you know, somebody, it might even have been you and Steinberg, but somebody was talking about the various coaches and how, oh, firing Marty Schottenheimer was a bad idea. But mm-hmm. Marty Schottenheimer had the same season that everybody else has, where he started terribly. He made a frantic run at the very end to get them to 8-8. And
yep.
Then he was fired. But if he had come back the next year and gone 7-9 or even 9-7 or 6-10 or whatever, he would have just would have been more of the same. Like even the things that people hold up as having been good actually weren't good. They were just kind of better mediocre than what we've got now.
That's right. Okay, I don't have anything else to say. You good?
I got nothing else. You got anything else going on? You watching any good TV or anything?
I'm trying to finish season 2 of Succession before season 3 starts. Or maybe it already started, but it's starting soon.
I don't know. Is it as good as people say?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. It's very entertaining.
All right, I'll try it.
How about you?
I got nothing. It's been a really weird week. It feels like all the weddings that got pushed back during COVID have now suddenly started happening in rapid succession. I feel like I've had no time to do anything. So no,
I do feel FOMO for not watching Squid Game yet on Netflix.
As do I.
Everybody's talking about it, man. Even my daughter's like, can I please watch it? And I'm like, no, I heard it was super graphic.
My son wants to watch it. I think he's younger than your daughter, if I remember the way they break down correctly. My daughter, who is 13, had tried to watch it. I don't know with who or under what circumstances. It was like, it was boring. I couldn't, whatever. And just sort of blew it off.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, all right. Attitude. So,
yeah. I don't know. I just feel like I'm missing out. I have to catch up. Okay. Anything else?
No, I got nothing. I will say that the high point of this season is that we continue talking. It's always good to catch up, man.
Yeah, man. Back at you. And this is very therapeutic for me. I was honestly, I was kind of angry. I was kind of angry coming into this. Now I'm ready to do the week.
Yeah, that sounds good. Now I'm excited to see what sort of debacle unfolds on field on Sunday. So, hey, hooray.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
Talk to you. Bye.
Bye.